great future. We're talking real money.
Let's go back in time. Way back in time. Millions of years back in time. Back to a day when our ancestors, yeah, I know you don't want to admit this because it's painful, but our ancestors were semi-ape-like humanoids, also known as Australopithecus, which no one could spell. And back then, they couldn't even say Australopithecus. They just went, So, one Australopithecus is sitting on a branch on a tree in the savannah, kind of leaning back, kicking back, a little hungry. Looks over, sees you. You, Tom, Australopithecus. Yeah. Chomping down on a nice, ripe, juicy papaya. And you're thinking, boy, I wish I had a nice, ripe, juicy papaya like Tommy Australopithecus. But no, I don't. I wonder where he got his. Maybe he has a stash of Australopithecus papayas put away somewhere. And maybe I should take them. Or maybe I should work harder. Or maybe I should take them. Or, yeah, I should take them. And anyway, we envy. We've always envied. We've envied. It's why we fight wars. It's why we steal from each other. It's why we do so many of the stupid things we do. And when it comes to money, well, that envy rears its head and makes a big mess of things.
It really does. And by the way, as an aside, one way we have advanced is I no longer pick bugs off of your skin. So we've moved past that, but only slightly.
Yeah. Yeah. Only and it's only because he can't figure out a 3,000 mile way to nitpick.
I was going to say, it's because my fingernails aren't long enough.
Nitpick in a whole new way now.
Exactly. You know, this is a great piece and a great thing to discuss because it's just another way people make bad decisions. And the article from the Wall Street Journal starts out as such. It is human nature to judge your financial health against your friends. Just know they probably aren't giving you a full accounting. How we measure up against our friends and peers has an outsized effect on our financial perception, economists and researchers say. It makes people feel bad about themselves. It makes people spend more money on themselves, just feeling overall less satisfied. A third say they spend more than they can afford to what we've known as a long-time term, keep up with the Joneses. They see the Joneses on Instagram and other places.
Keep up with the Australopithecus.
Exactly. I mean, one couple said, wait, we saw people that had kids in college and they're going on these glamorous vacations and making big ticket purchases. And that prompted the impulse in me to do something. And by the way, credit to them.
What did they do? Did they go steal their neighbor's fancy vacations?
Actually, what they did in this case was pretty smart. They started posting less on social media and kept the focus on the health of their business, which is really a good idea. Researchers say there's a strong link between overspending and time spent on social media. Think that one over.
Yeah. No, that's why I'd never, ever go look at your Facebook pages after your vacations.
This is a point. So
particularly after the summer's upcoming vacation.
Well, that's true. And as Don knows, I'm not on social media. Well,
but
okay.
Your wife
LinkedIn.
Is.
Yeah. Does she put all the stuff up there? I don't know. Does she put all the pictures
She goes
up
on
there?
Facebook, but okay. No, LinkedIn is fake social media.
Okay.
That
well, that's
really
that's
social.
That's as far as I get.
In
and
fact,
I do not put my
I saw on John
there.
Oliver's show the other night. He goes, do people still use LinkedIn?
It's actually doing the best it's ever done now. I don't know if that's because of its association
for
LinkedIn.
For business.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Not really, that's business media.
That's as social media as I'm ever going to get.
That's
it. That's me. I didn't know Danielle still puts the stuff up there and I'm going to get mad at her.
Well, after the Africa vacation, you know she will.
I'll be picking the bugs out. Here's the thing. Jealousy is a bad thing, generally. We know that, right? It leads to some bad decisions. Sort of looking at other people to say, how am I doing is a bad thing, right? I mean, because generally it leads to making bad decisions. Here's the other part is when you look at those people and you see all those things, is it the truth or is it a mirage of some kind? People used to admire. I don't think it's as much anymore. They used to admire the person that had the fancy car. Cars were kind of a thing where people said, look at that car he or she drives. They really got it made, right? I mean, people sort of put value in forms of transportation that way. Never in my household, by the way, because my dad loved writing checks for cars, and he was proud to say at one time he owned a Chevrolet Vega, which, if you can look it up, was one of the worst cars ever made by Chevrolet, but it was very inexpensive.
I got that beat. I owned a Ford Pinto.
Ford Pinto. There you go. And you survived.
My dad had an AMC Gremlin.
Oh, I remember that guy. I used to have a friend who had one of those. Yeah. Very, very, very,
very unattractive ugly car.
Yeah, very yes. unattractive car. But less time on social media worked out for that woman. But I think another couple things you should always do that you should do. This is personal. You need to have your own goals and ignore what others are doing, right? I mean, especially financially. We see people all the time that make horrible decisions because
difficult to do.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Very, no question.
Yeah, don't pay any attention.
Are
you
funny.
Kidding? Yeah. They're rubbing it in my face.
I know. Here's something to think about and something to read, by the way, if you don't believe me. How about the book Millionaire Next Door? I read that. I loved it. And what it talked about was sort of all those people that really do get wealthy, not by driving fancy cars, not by having humongously great African vacations, but saving, investing, and ignoring others. And yeah, you're right. It's easy for me to say, right? I can say it. Will I live it? I don't think that's easy. I concur. And you know, you've heard me say this before, that money truly is like gasoline on a road trip. You don't want to run out of gas, but you don't want to make money the focus either.
You don't want to make gasoline the focus.
Well, gasoline,
road trip. Right.
Money is a road trip. Yeah, it's
or,
bad.
Or you don't want to keep too much gas in the car because it can be dangerous.
And I only fill up once a month now or something, so it doesn't really matter to me. Love the plug-in hybrid. Oh, you're going to feel jealous now that I only fill up once?
Yeah, my hybrid doesn't plug in.
Okay, I just love that about mine. But this is a fascinating and continuing topic. There is no correct answer other than I truly believe that the people who are successful manage to tune out the stuff that's not important. Same as with your finances when you're looking at how to invest. They get rid of the other stuff. They don't pay attention.
Really what it comes down to is life and investing particularly is a process of changing attitudes. Because the problem is often our perceptions become our realities, and all we have to do is perceive differently for that reality to change. You truly, as you said, you don't know what lies beneath the surface. And way too often we draw conclusions based on the surface. And I'll give you an example. A really ridiculous example. And I don't know the whole story, but I know there's a story there somewhere. There's a young man who lives in the community we live in, who lives in a house that I've actually heard him say at a party he doesn't own. He just happens to know the people who owned it, and he lives there. It's a multi-million dollar house. He's
wow.
young.
Yeah.
He has no apparent visible means of support. Not that we can tell. Could be a trust fund baby. Who knows? He is the only guy in town. He's in his maybe late 20s, early 30s, who drives both a Bentley and a Rolls Royce.
Excuse me?
New Bentley, new Rolls Royce.
God.
Parked out in front of his.
Which is hard to do, driving two cars.
It's not a mansion. This is a $3 million home.
Not $10 million.
Not 10.
Yeah, right.
And yet there's a Bentley and a Rolls Royce. Now,
wow.
You know, you can envy this person.
Absolutely.
You know, you just, in my case, I know there's got to be more beneath the surface to this story. Sometimes people look incredibly successful and they're either in debt up to their eyeballs.
I was getting to that. Yeah.
Or they're crooks.
Or they got lucky on something.
Many
Bitcoin,
cases
maybe.
They're crooks. Or yeah. They got really lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they got lucky and they might think they're going to stay lucky. There's a lot of people, by the way, that make money and then run out and spend it all, then find out, wait,
it could be a lottery winner. Could have won a lottery, yeah, but
exactly.
Most of that money's now in a Bentley and a Rolls Royce. And those
right.
generally, the new ones don't appreciate. Well, none of them appreciate.
No, they're not a good return on your investment. Yeah. And all you have to do is see professional athletes, for example, to see how people that have a major hit for a year or two, or maybe three or four, if they're lucky, don't end up doing well in the long haul. I think that's spot on, Don. So yeah, this is a topic, by the way, for your family, I think as well. And so, I'd like to try it with my daughter, see what happens.
Good luck.
Yeah, I know. It's very.
Yeah.
Well, she got a little lesson recently when she went on a school trip. They stayed at a, how do we say this? Less than 4-star hotel as part of the school. And she was like, wow, look at this place. Poor, I said, wait a minute.
Wow,
this is really tough all over, huh, kid?
She stayed at like a roadside inn.
I think it was like a Fairview or something. Yeah, Fairfield? Something like that. Yeah, Fairfield.
Fairfield by Marriott. You mean the place Debbie and I stay whenever we go anywhere? We stay at a Marriott, Fairfield or a Spring Hill?
Well, now you're bringing your own room with you, so it doesn't really matter anymore.
But wait, the rooms are clean.
Yeah.
You get a free breakfast.
Okay, sounding good.
It's a bed. There's a shower. There's a toilet. What more does she flip? You have spoiled the child.
Oh, there's no question. And we were trying to explain to her that it wasn't always this way because, by the way, I also mentioned that when you and I started this firm, I went to Arizona once on a kind of a scouting mission to see if we could land some new clients. We stayed in a place where, it was bad. Really, really, really bad.
Me?
My wife and I stayed down
there. Oh, I was going to say, I don't remember a really, really bad.
No, you were not there.
I remember some bad. Although I do remember a trip to Seattle where the reservation was messed up at the the Residence Inn, because I'm a Marriott person.
Yeah.
And the only room we could find in the whole Bellevue 405 area was at the Motel 6.
This is
you know, on the way to your house?
Yeah,
the Motel 6
I know
on the right there?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was, the parking lot was flooded because it had been raining, 12 inches of water. Linoleum, I'm walking in, and I haven't been in a Motel 6 since I was in my 20s, when Tom Baudette, we'll leave the light on for you.
Sure.
I'm going, the floors are all linoleum. I went, this is easy to wash out on if there's a murder.
Conveniently enough.
Shows the floor off, and it's good to go for the next tenant.
So it's not always the Ritz is what you're saying. Or maybe the Regis.
And actually, the less you stay in the Ritzy, the more money you're likely to have for the futury.
Yeah, so that's good. Good stuff. I got lots of questions. I know we got a little time left over here. So can you take a few?
We always have time left over purpose.
But no, I actually have three. I took three this time because I knew the topic might be a little short. So,
okay.
All right, here we go. One of your neighbors, RB from Orlando, Florida, says.
Oh, the guy with the Bentley.
Yeah, he's right down the street. No, he says he sees that's you celebrity. Walking the dog every day. What are your thoughts on VGT? VGT. I gave it as 25% of my portfolio. It's done well. Not sure if it should be that large a portion of my portfolio.
I forgot what VGT is.
G as in good, or T as in, and T as in Thomas. V as in victory.
VGT. What?
Yeah.
You want none in that? Zero.
I know. I took the liberty of looking up because isn't it like a technology fund or something?
It's their information technology ETF. Yeah. That should be up 0% of your portfolio.
Thank you.
Because if you have a diversified portfolio,
you own those.
U.S. and international, you are going to have a very large position in information technology anyway.
Yeah. You own it. So you don't need
a lot of it
specifically.
By the way. Lot of it.
All right, this comes from Greg in El Cajon, California. Guys, listening to the podcast just now, you mentioned something about 7% rule with annuities. And I think that's conflation. I think we might have talked about annuities. The 7% rule.
I do too.
The rule of 72? Is he talking about the rule of 72 or 7% rule with annuities?
I don't know that there's a 7% rule.
Yeah, I agree.
But we had talked about the fact that annuities – we're paying 7%, but that the 7% wasn't a real 7% return.
Ah,
it's not cash on cash. That 7% return is a partial return of your principal.
He gets to that. He says, I know what annuity is a curse word, and why is it so? But the 7% thing baffled me. You stated that some of the 7% is your own money coming back to you, but I don't understand that's bad. Why that's bad? As long as you have guaranteed income until you die, why does it matter it's your money or your earnings?
Well, because think about it for a minute. If your annuity is paying you out 7% per year, let's just say you have, for simplicity of math, you have a $100,000 annuity, okay? And it's paying you out you put $100,000 in, and they promise you 7% a year. So that's $7,000 a year. So for the first just double check my math because I hate it when I get my math wrong. For the first 14 years, you are just getting your money back.
Yeah.
So if you die in 14 years, then you've only then have you gotten your money back, and all of the interest that has been earned on that money over those 14 years belongs to the insurance company.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned this at Retire Meet. So this is an important lesson that any of those guarantee, anything that's guaranteed that way, there is a cost to that, right? Because if instead, if your money's invested in stocks and bonds where there is no guarantee of return, the money's always yours, there's no surrender, and the cost of that is less. It's a trade-off. So if you want to hand the money to somebody and wait 15 years to get some of their money in addition to yours, that's fine. But you have to understand that is absolutely a trade-off. That's the difference.
Well, and that's the reality in this business, is that everything must come at a cost. Safety is not free. You can't get high returns with no risk. You must take risk. And the let's maybe change that a little bit. Let's say you invest that at 7% per year for those 14 years. How much money are we actually talking about? And we're looking at the insurance company would have made about $160,000. You would have gotten $100,000 back if you died in 14 years, and they would have collected $165,000.
There you go.
Right. Who made out best on that deal?
Yeah.
Sure, you got a safe income, but they're betting you're going to die earlier, and they are usually right because they have the actuarial tables on their side. They will not make a bet with you that they are likely to lose.
No doubt. Last question. Nathan from Jonesboro, Indiana says, listen to you guys every day. Appreciate what you do. Just listened to your retirement regrets episode. It left me wanting more info from you guys in regards to finding a 100% fee-only fiduciary and or CFP. My wife and I are below 40 and haven't had time to amass a portfolio larger than the $500,000 required to get this type of guidance for a fee. They simply don't want our accounts our size. Like you said in the episode, it could be wise to use an hourly advisor, but they're hard to find. Where should we look? Are there other options? We don't want to go to Ed Jones, by the way, who would gladly take you, or Raymond James, again, who would gladly take you, but we don't know who else would be willing to help plan for our future. Ideas.
This is a dilemma, and it seriously is a dilemma. It's been a dilemma for us since we started Vestory in 2009.
Yes. That, look at you remembering and everything. Well done, sir.
That's the last thing I remember. The problem is that the cost of being an investment, this is where we really get into the weeds. The costs of being an investment advisor are unbelievable. You cannot believe what it costs because of the high degree of regulation, the high cost to remember, if you're a registered investment advisor, you have to register in every state you do business, which is thousands and thousands of dollars. You've got to have lawyers. You've got to have compliance departments. You've got to have your accountants. So when somebody says, you know, we're going to charge you 1% per year, and you go, well, on $500,000, that's $5,000. Well, but that $5,000, when you got to pay all those other people and still pay an advisor to do the work, it's just barely working. At $500,000. Under $500,000, it barely works. It's just, which is why you see advisors who take smaller accounts charging 2.5% per year, or they have the little trick where they say, oh, we charge 1%, but there's a $10,000 minimum.
And therefore you're paying way more than 1%.
Way more. So here's the direction I usually take. I say, get good advice. Take advantage of people like us who occasionally give free advice to get basic planning. maybe pay to have a financial plan done.
That's what I was going to go worth.
$1,000 to $1,500, maybe $2,000 for the best.
$2,500 is ours now.
Oh, so. We're down 2,000. Okay, see, it's been a long time. A couple of $1,000 for a plan. Right. Get a real life plan done.
Yep.
Because the portfolio part, particularly when you're young, managing the portfolio is the easiest part.
Indeed.
When you get older and your needs change and your wealth is greater, and there are tax situations and estate situations and creating lifelong income and Social Security and IRMA and all of the other annoying people involved, then it really becomes a necessity. So get a plan when you're young, build your own portfolio. We give out portfolios all the time for nothing. We do. And then use somebody like us. Find somebody that you really trust, who's a media source that you can listen to regularly to keep you on track. I mean, remember, you guys can use us in a way to help keep you on course, to be that financial counselor, that little voice in your, that little Jiminy Cricket voice telling you you are a real boy.
Yeah, no, here's the thing. The plan is perfect. If you're 40 and you pay $2,500 for a plan, a couple of things happen. Number one, it gives you the roadmap, right? Keep saving here, open a Roth, do these other things you may not have thought about, for example. Even down to the nitty gritty of sort of asset location, a good plan will tell you own these here and here and here. Number two.
So we better have that in our plan.
We do. Number two is if you buy a plan from us, and this is not a promotion, but if we do, we're available for a year. You can call us back and say, I was thinking of doing this. What? So it's kind of more regular advice than you would get by just buying a plan. And here's the plan. Go do it. Number three, Don is absolutely correct. If you're in the accumulation phase, and you're simply putting that money away every month, and in many cases, because in an employer plan is being rebalanced for you, so there really isn't a lot of rebalancing to be done, then the work is done, you're set, you're off and running. So you don't need somebody that's looking at this every day. Completely different when you're getting close to retirement, completely different in retirement, all those places, as you've said many times, Don, and I think correctly so, you really do need professional guidance pretty regularly at that point, because you just don't want to mess things up. It can be very permanent screw up, and that's a bad time for
that. Well, the other thing is when you're in accumulation, you still have time to fix the mistakes.
Good point, as we all have done.
You don't. You don't when you get to 65 and you've accumulated all the wealth, basically, you're going to accumulate in your life. You may add a little to it, but the bulk of it has been accumulated. The days of accumulation are over, and now it gets complicated. That's the investing part is the easiest.
I agree. Yeah.
It's the easiest.
Once you put that together. So there you go.
Hey, if you have questions, go to talkingrealmoney.com.
No, don't send anymore. We got so, I still got a pile of them on my desk. I got a pile of people that want to talk to us since retirement. I got a pile of everything.
All right. So don't do anything.
Don't reach out. Don't do anything.
Don't do anything. Here's an idea. You could do us a huge favor. You could tell your friends and your acquaintances and your family and your enemies and people
you really don't like.
People at church who are being approached by that guy from the brokerage firm down the street.
Yeah.
Just, you know, if you see the guy from Ed, just, you know, stand up.
The man from Ed.
You know, there's the man from Ed, and then there's the podcast, the Don and Tom people. Listen to them first.
That's good.
All right. Do you have anything else to add?
I have nothing else to add other than thank you for listening to us. I have a great sense of gratitude about all this. The fact that you listen, and all joking aside, we're always here to answer your questions. We're always here to take your calls. Really appreciate it. Love the conversations.
And brethren, with the final words with which we always end this podcast, we bid you a fond farewell and a bright and happy however long you have till the next time, because we are talking real money.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast were current on the date recorded. Opinions, estimates, forecasts, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice, including any forward-looking estimates or statements which are based on certain expectations and assumptions. Although information and opinions given have been obtained from or based on sources believed to be reliable, no warranty or representation is made as to their correctness, completeness, or accuracy. Information presented on the podcast is not personalized investment advice from Appella Wealth. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for everyone. This podcast does not identify all the risks, direct or indirect, or other considerations which might be material to you when entering any financial transaction. Past performance does not guarantee future results, and profitable results cannot be guaranteed. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. The podcast is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Wealth, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Please see Appella Wealth's ADV Part 2A on our website for information regarding Appella's fees and services. Appella Capital, LLC, DBA Appella Wealth, is an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The firm only transacts business in the states where it is properly registered or excluded or exempt from registration requirements. Registration with the SEC or any state securities authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Appella does not provide tax or legal advice, and nothing either stated or implied here should be inferred as providing such advice. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and important disclosure related to performance of any specific index or fund quoted in this podcast. Is anybody still listening?